Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey, so that we can plan to leave your family something besides just alone. You know, leave them something, leave them some stuff. I mean, you know, I guess every once in a while I'll be talking to my, maybe it's only one conversation I had with my mom where she said something along the lines of, "Oh, but I feel bad that I'm spending your inheritance." And I said, "Really, Mom? Are you dead?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, then probably it's not my inheritance. It's still your money." And, you know, I don't remember the exact, that's the part I remember about the conversation. I don't remember the rest of the conversation. I'm sure it was in some sort of context, but still. So our phone number, the phone number to talk to us in studio is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. And you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. So, I've talked about lots of things on mobile estate planning. Talked about, what's a will, what's a trust, what's a will versus a trust. Talked about powers of attorney. Talked about Medicaid and long-term care planning. Talked about all these things. And the question is, why are we talking about all these things? What does it matter? You know, if we do it right, it'll be perfectly fine, right? Because, you know, that's what we did. And all we have to do is make sure that we just have to follow the correct rules and everything's good, right? Well, then we run into the problem that we see where, you know, people, you know, the law is not about what is right. The law is not about what happened. The law is about what you can prove. So if we've got, you know, loss, you know, and people get that confused all the time. I mean, you know, and it's like, well, you know, well, that's what's right. That's what it should be. Well, you know, what's right can sometimes be in the eye of the beholder. I mean, it's you know, what one person says is right isn't necessarily what another person believes to be right all on its own. You know, and you get into a lot of different questions about who's right, who's wrong, what's right, what's wrong. And, you know, sometimes we'd all like to believe that there's just one answer and that one answer is the only way it's supposed to happen. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, I've seen the picture of there's a guy looking at a six and he says six. And there's a guy standing exactly opposite him who's looking at the same figure and says, no, nine. So which one's correct and which one's incorrect? Well, they're both correct. Well, how can they both be correct? Because one has to be right and one has to be wrong. No, they're both correct. They're looking at it from a different angle. And they're looking at it from a different perspective. And, you know, if you have a six or you have a nine, now if you had an eight there, it would be reversed and, you know, be great. You could see eight and eight unless you start at it from the side and then you think it was an infinity symbol. But, you know, the law is about what not... Law is not necessarily about what's right or what happened. It's about what you can prove. So some of these things that we do in estate planning, some of the reasons we have the formalities that we do is because we want to be able to prove what we said. We want to be able to prove what it is that we want to do. And we want to be able to prove the intent of the person who made the estate plan. Now, a lot of times people will want to know, well, what does the law say about this? What does the law say about that? And how come the law says X, Y, and Z? And so, I had a client just the other day who they sent me a, they sent me a question. They're like, oh, well, what about this? What about this question here? What happens if, what happens if a minor is involved? Does their spouse, does their spouse handle things in the trust? And I'm like, I'm not entirely sure what your question means. And it came to, just kind of looked at it and thought to myself, I'm like, okay, well, a spouse of a person, so like, I think what they were asking, and I actually asked for clarification on this question because I was unsure. I think they were asking, so if one of the beneficiaries dies and their kids are supposed to get the money, do we then, if they aren't getting the money, then does their spouse control things? I said, well, the money is still available for the person. The money's still available for the person who, for the beneficiary for whom the trust has been set up. If there's decisions to be made and a person is a minor, then their guardian is going to be able to set up, make decisions for them under the general rules. And even within a trust, we can sometimes say, hey, well, we've got to talk about, who can make decisions for an underage beneficiary. And so, I talked with them about how the default rules were that their guardian would be able to make decisions for them, but there's still a trustee who is going to be in charge of the trust. And so you've got a baby who, or sorry, you've got an underage person who's unable to make their own decisions. They can be more than a baby. They can be older, but they're a child of some sort. And so this person, the trustee can still make, the trustee can still make decisions for the trust even if one of the beneficiaries has passed away. So you've still got a beneficiary who's taking care of the trust, you still got a trustee who's taking care of the trust, but now, the beneficiary has now changed. And so if there are decisions that a beneficiary needs to make or, decision or election that a beneficiary needs to make, then the beneficiary can make that selection. Or if beneficiary themselves cannot make that decision, then it's the beneficiary, their representative, so like a parent or a guardian, has the ability to do that. So if you've got one spouse, and then if they die, the kids are supposed to get things as a beneficiary, the other spouse is probably going to be the guardian. So if there are beneficiary designations that are beneficiary decisions that need to be made, then the beneficiary's representative can make those decisions. But the trust is still the most important. The trustee is still in charge of the trust. So it's not like the spouse of a beneficiary is going to just take over. And so, that's kind of the general rule, but the question they asked me didn't quite make sense. So I kind of asked them for clarification of what they meant, because I wanted to make sure that I was doing what they wanted and got it right. But people get hung up on what are the rules, what are the default rules, what does the law say can and cannot happen. And in an estate planning perspective, in estate planning law, the question becomes, okay, was this set up lawfully? If yes, then what's the person's intent? What do they want to have happen? Because we're trying to reflect the intent of the individual who created the estate plan in estate planning law. And even in probate law, we're trying to make sure that we carry out the intent of the person who's passed away. So that it's a very important distinction. I mean, so sometimes we think of the law and it's like, oh, well, this person, they took a weapon and they went and they knocked over a 7-Eleven and they committed robbery. And the law says you can't do that. You can't take the property of somebody else. It's robbery. Okay, well, that's true. Well, not all law works like that. And estate planning law, the laws governing it, There are certain things that are prohibited, but for the most part, we're trying to divine your intent. We're trying to figure out what is your intent and get your intent written down clearly so that it can be carried out. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLDZ, The Source. Phone number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. The direct line is the number to use if you want to talk to me about your own personal situation or if you're interested in having me come visit you and we can talk about an estate plan. Just this morning, I was visiting with somebody who had listened to my show on 560 and they had a need and I was able to fulfill that need. So, you know, if you'd like me to come talk to you about your own stuff, I'd be happy to do so. Just not for the next 20 minutes while I'm still on the air. I mean, if you want to talk to me on the air about your own personal stuff, that's cool, but it'll go out. I mean, I'd like to say that there's nobody listening, but I know that's not true. I have a listening audience and they listen. So, you know, stuff like that. But, it goes back to the law is what you can prove. So, you know, what is a person's intent? What is this person, you know, what were they thinking? What were they trying to accomplish? Well, gee, let's read what they wrote down. Looks like if they die before their spouse, they want to give everything to their spouse. Okay, now we look up and say, is the spouse dead? Yes. Oh, they're second to die. Okay, well, so no spouse. Well, what do we want to do after a spouse? Well, it says here we're supposed to split things up equally among the kids. Okay, cool. So we'll split things up equally among the kids. Well, wait a minute. It says here we have a specific gift where the gun collection is supposed to go to the daughter because the son hates guns. Well, we probably ought to do that specific gift, and then we can split things up, or, you know, whatever order they're in. Well, you know, so how can we trust this document? You know, anybody can write anything down, and I was pretty good at faking my mom's handwriting when I needed my mom's note to get out of not going to class or being sick and skipping out on class when I was in, you know, elementary or junior high. So somebody could forge this. Well, that's why we have the formal requirements that are set up under the law. Now, a will needs to be notarized. So you need to have a notary that witnesses you sign the will and can notarize and say, yep, they signed it. They signed it freely, voluntarily, not under duress, and of their own free will and volition and choice. And they understood what they were doing, and they had mental competency to understand what they were doing. Okay. The old rules were that you needed to have a couple of witnesses too. And, you know, I tend to play under the old rules because I like to have a notary not be the only person to testify to something. So I'll have a notary and two witnesses who say, yep, it was that person that signed it. They did it of their own free will. They knew what they were doing and they accepted it and they're okay with it. Because then when somebody says, well, hey, that's not what Dad wanted. He wanted something totally different. And I know because we had a conversation, just the two of us. And it's amazing how many of those conversations tend to be remarkably self-serving. I'm like, really? So Dad sat down with you and Dad told you, I want you to get all the money, but I'm not telling anybody else. It'll be our little secret. That seems a little too convenient, a little too self-serving. So I've actually written a trust for somebody who essentially had that conversation. It was a dad who wanted to leave everything to the daughter. And he had two sons, but he wasn't so happy with the two sons for a lot of reasons. And I had a long conversation with him about why he was unhappy with his sons. And I said, you know, you might want to leave them what's in your original document and not cut them out completely. Because if you cut them out completely, they're going to be upset. They're going to fight it. And even if your daughter wins, because of the way that the law works and the legal system can be quite slow, it can be quite frustrating. I understand this as a practicing attorney and also someone who's, you know, seen the legal system. I've never seen it as a defendant, but I've seen it as a prosecutor. I've seen it as the father of a victim of a crime. My daughter was criminally victimized this year. But it can be a maddeningly slow and frustrating process. That's for sure. So I told him, I'm like, you know, it could cost more to fight this out in court than if you just left them the money that they were originally supposed to receive. And we had a long discussion about it and why we would want to do what we might want to do. And eventually the client decided that even he wanted to take the chance. He wanted to go ahead and leave everything to his daughter and cut his two sons out completely. And so I, you know, despite my hesitations, I said, okay, we'll go ahead and do that. And so we thought we'd go ahead and, you know, get things figured out, and do what, you know, and so that's how I wrote it for him, because that's how he wanted to do it. You know, I had told him what the potential drawbacks were. I told him what the questions were. I told him where I thought that there might be an opportunity to fight it. And still he was like, no, I want to do it this way. I said, okay, you've been informed. You've been told. And so we went ahead, we wrote up the trust, and I went back to visit him 3 weeks later. And 3 weeks later, he could tell me everything that he wanted to do, and you know, we confirmed that it was all in the trust. And so we got it signed and notarized and went on our way. And then about a year and a half later, he passed away. You know, my clients die on me. It's what they do. You know, everybody's going to die. Just mine seemed to do it with a more frequent basis because they're planning their own, you know, for their own demise, you know. And a lot of my clients are elderly. You know, if you come to me as a 35-year-old couple with young kids, I don't expect you to be dying anytime soon, unless you're like my one client who came to me when she was 27 and she'd beaten breast cancer a third time. And this fourth time, she didn't think she was going to beat breast cancer because it was back and it was malignant. It was aggressive. It was everywhere. And the doctors had given her 6 weeks to live. Now she lasted seven. So she, you know, but you know, we set it up knowing, and it was very sad because she had a 2.5-year-old and that she just wasn't, you know, she didn't make it because the aggressive breast cancer had come back and metastasized and done all the things that cancer does, and it ended up taking her. But once this gentleman had died, and his daughter called me and said, okay, well, he passed away. I'm like, all right, well, let's kind of go ahead and do what the trust says. Then she called me a couple weeks later. She's like, so my brothers are saying they want to fight it, and they're saying that Dad was completely mentally incompetent, didn't know what he was doing, and all this type of stuff. She says, what do I do? I said, well, you're going to have to fight it out. And she says, well, can you help me with that? I said, well, I don't do the administration or the litigation part of it, but here's the name of my friend who does, so he can help you. And I got called as a witness because I was one of the people that had witnessed his signature. And so I went in and I talked all about how I had met with him and we'd gone through the benefits and the drawbacks of doing it the way that we did it. And we'd had a conversation and he completely understood the ramifications of what he was doing and why he was doing it. And then that 3 weeks later, we had another conversation where he could repeat back to me what we had said. And, you know, all of this added up to, he knew what he was doing. Just because the sons didn't like what he was doing doesn't mean that it was not doable. And so if they were going to attack the trust on grounds that Dad was mentally incompetent or didn't know what he was doing, you know, they didn't really have a leg to stand on. Now, I mean, the brothers, the two sons were like, well, this is unfair. This is totally unfair. And I said, that may be, but it's also what Dad wanted. And fair or unfair is not the primary consideration under estate planning law. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560. The numbers are gone. It's 560. Is that 100.7? What are the other ones? 95.3 and 1220. Is that right? They're usually up there. There we go. 1220, not 50. I'm mixing and matching my numbers. We're going to try again. It's 560 AM, the source, 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. There. Charlie, I think I got all of them. Can I get a thumbs up? Yeah, see, I got all of them. See, it's a good thing I have a producer who can keep me in line, because otherwise, you know, I'm like, well, we've got a 12, and there's a 5, and there's a 6, and there's a 3 in there somewhere. Carry the two? Wait a minute. Are we supposed to carry the two? I thought we had to keep the two under wraps so that nobody knew about it. You know, at least that's what I always tried to sell to my math teachers when they told me that I was supposed to carry the two. I'm like, no. I was keeping that two in reserve. You can't tell me that. I'm helping my kids with math homework now. And I'll be like, oh, we'll just do it this way. They're like, well, that's not the way that our teacher taught us. I'm like, okay. Apparently, I was taught in a different methodology. But my way seems like it's easier. But hey, you can do it however you want. So sometimes when I'm doing math with my kids, I'm like, yeah, I don't know how well I would have done at this particular spot. But phone number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So, you know, talking about this guy and the, you know, trying to, so, you know, we sat down and, you know, what actually happened? Well, what I was testifying about is what I saw and I observed happen. Now, I did not have a dog in this fight, did not have a horse in this race. If one child versus another child got the money, it didn't really make a difference to me. I didn't care. You know, not going to hurt me one way or another. So, you know, I was kind of this neutral witness. Now, even having said that, sometimes you have a neutral witness who can observe things and observe things from a different angle and see things differently. You know, my example of the 6 versus the 9. But, you know, so I came in, but I could help prove that, you know, and so this gentleman, he had Parkinson's. And as far as I understand, Parkinson's affects your ability to hold your limbs still, not your ability to think clearly. Now, there are stages of Parkinson's where it will rob you of your ability to make your own decisions. But this gentleman, from my observations of him, was not there. And so we had observations of him and, you know, what was going on, what was there and what was not there. But when we came down to it and we had to prove it in court, we had to, I was in a deposition. I don't think it actually went to court. I think they settled out of court, figured it out and moved on. But we had this whole, and you know, it was I'm sure it was a maddeningly frustrating process for the daughter to say, everything says I'm supposed to get it. And now we're getting a fight. Well, yes, there's a fight. Well, you know, why do I have to pay? And she says to me one day, she says, well, why do I have to pay money to fight out what dad wanted? I'm like, because you have to prove what dad wanted. The legal system doesn't move quite as quickly as we might hope. And sometimes that's a good thing. So, I mean, there's one of the not so great movies that always shows up on, you know, some cable channel every Saturday afternoon, Starship Troopers, you know, and there's a scene in there where it says a murderer was convicted this morning of murder and executed this afternoon. And we're like, yeah, that sounds like good, swift justice. Yes. Awesome. Boom. Done. Got it. Over with. Well, here's the question. What happens if that trial was somehow incorrect? What happens if that trial was based on incorrect evidence or faulty evidence or perjured testimony or flat out lying? Wouldn't it be nice if we had some sort of appeals process to allow that to play itself out before we went ahead and executed somebody? Probably. Now, you can, you know, and there are many people who will make the argument that the appeals process is far too complicated and cumbersome, and, you know, executing somebody 15 to 20 years after they've been convicted doesn't really provide any measure of justice and so on and so forth. And I'm willing to listen to people and have that conversation. But my point is simply that swift justice that reaches a conclusion, you know, very quickly and then moves on may not be the best way to do things, because sometimes the justice system moves slowly. You know, in the case of my daughter having been the victim of a crime, you know, the crime was committed in April, and even after a guilty plea, the perpetrator was sentenced on Monday, so 2 days ago. So it was 6 months to be able to get from point A to point B, from, you know, when the crime was committed to when the sentencing hearing was held. You know, it just, and, you know, some of the other victims were super upset about how slow it was. And I guess based on my experience in the legal system and having worked in the Denver DA's office and the juvenile court, I was like, yeah, this is actually decently fast. But, you know, that's my experience. That's my thoughts on it. And not everybody agrees with me on that point. But, you know, and the same thing with like probate or estate planning. People are like, oh, well, how long does probate take? Because it should be really quick. My estate's pretty simple. I've just got a house and, you know, some cash and then money in the bank and my 401k. So it shouldn't take very long at all. And I'm like, well, the legal process is going to take probably 6 to 12 months because we need to give notice to unknown creditors and we need to notify beneficiaries and all these other things that need to be done. So the legal process can take a while. And, you know, I guess when you're waiting on money, any amount of time you have to wait is too long. If you're, you know, just being like, oh, hey, I'm going to inherit some money. Cool. I don't need it to live off of, but it'll be nice to have. Then you're a little bit less of a rush. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, well, there's a fire. Why do we got to do things so quickly? Well, and sometimes you want to do things quickly. Sometimes you want to move a little bit more slowly. That's one of the reasons people set up trusts is so that they don't have to wait the 6 to 12 months of, just wait time and go through the process of the probate process. You know, it's up to whomever is carrying things out to decide what's the best way to do that. But you have, you know, it's about what you can prove. So we have the formal requirements of it has to be signed, witnessed by a notary, witnessed by witnesses, so that they can testify, yes, this is what happened. You know, as an attorney, I've been called in to testify about what did the person mean? What was their intent? What were we trying to accomplish as we got into the, which we were writing this trust? What were they going to do? You know, I think that what I've wrote is pretty clear, but when you're trying to make it mean something else, you just grasp at whatever meaning it is, you know, so. And, you know, there's different interpretations, and I get that too. But the reason we do all of this is because the law is about what you can prove, not necessarily about what happened, not necessarily about what's right. So thank you for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey. That's why we do estate planning, so that we can prove what you want to whomever is asking. I will be back next week. Coming up next is John Rush and Rush to Reason. Let's keep listening and have a great day. Thanks and bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.